Hi, and welcome back to The Comb, a BBC World Service original podcast. I'm Kim Chakanetsa, and I'm thrilled to be back, combing the continent for stories that matter. For those of you who are longtime listeners of The Comb, welcome back. And to our new listeners, welcome. I have so many great stories lined up for you in 2023. Stories about motherhood and mental illness, what happens when you strike gold, and the life-changing consequences of being falsely accused. All those to come. And if you have any stories and ideas that matter to you that you want us to cover, then drop me an email at thecomb@bbc.com.
This is The Comb.
Ye ni The Comb.
The Comb, no.
Ni The Comb.
The Comb.
In the past few years, calls for the return of Africa's looted artifacts have grown louder.
Today I stand here to condemn the forceful imprisonment of Gonzo.
We are like children who don't know their mother. If you take away a man's identity, you take away somebody's own self-esteem.
Demands for restitution have become bolder.
Nul n'a le droit.
Activists have tried forcibly removing some of the objects from museums in Europe.
I want to go.
And artists have found creative ways of making their demands heard.
Take me back home, 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 take me back home.
It is estimated that during colonial rule, more than 500,000 cultural artefacts were taken from Africa. By some accounts, 90% of these artefacts are still held in Europe. The struggle to reclaim this art has many different voices. But today I want to tell you a story about just one of those voices. It's a story about many things, about history, power, and identity. But at its core, it's about a promise a granddaughter made to her grandfather and the unexpected journey she undertook to try and make that promise come true.
All right, so my name is Njobati Sylvie Vergnoy. I'd like to actually be called Vergnoy because that's my native name, so I really like the name.
And Vergnoy, where are we speaking to you from today? Where are you?
I'm currently in Yaoundé, the capital city of Cameroon.
And is that home for you? It's hard to know exactly where to begin with Vergnoy's story. So I'm going to start it when Vergnoy was 17 and she found herself facing an unexpected identity crisis.
I looked at myself in the mirror and I was like, who is this person?
You see, up until then, Vergnoy had a clear sense of who she was, an identity that had been shaped by her childhood in Cameroon's northwest.
Because my grandfather, whom I lived with, was a reverend pastor.
Life with her grandfather, a Presbyterian pastor, revolved around the church.
Christianity was very much a part of my daily life. I would wake up in the morning, weekdays, especially during the Lent season. We would go to church 5 o'clock in the morning. And then on Sunday, it's a whole big service. So the one identity I had growing up was, I'm a child of God.
It was an identity Vergnoy never had reason to question. But when she turned 17, she moved to a different part of the country. And there, something shifted.
I had grown all my life in the Anglophone regions. I'd lived about, 17 years in the English-speaking region. So I was used to having my lessons taught in English. I would go to the market and discuss with people in English. And then when I had to go to the university, I had to move from Bamenda, the northwest region, to Yaoundé in the center region, which is now a French-speaking culture. And it was a total shock for me, I would say. I felt unwelcomed in the French region of the country.
Why Vergnoy felt unwelcome is tied to Cameroon's long and complicated colonial history. What you need to know is that during that period, the country ended up divided by language, with the majority speaking French and the rest English. And over the years, that divide has become a source of tension, with those in the Anglophone region accusing the French-speaking majority of marginalisation through the prioritisation of the French language and things like the education and legal system.
Violence in Cameroon is escalating as the conflict between the military and armed separatists intensifies.
In 2016, those tensions spiralled into an ongoing deadly conflict, which has claimed at least 3,000 lives. Verenoy says she sometimes felt this divide in her daily interactions.
For example, I would be in the market, and because I don't call words the way the typical French person would call the words, I would be mocked at or I'll be insulted. I would be called an Anglophone. And that to me really hurt me. Also, where I come from, Bamenda, of a sudden or gradually became like an insult.
And this is when Verenoy found herself asking questions about who she was and where exactly she belonged.
But who am I when I'm not speaking English, when I don't have the English system of education, when I'm not dealing with the French legal system, when I strip off all the colonial cultures, all the colonial legacies that I've inherited, who am I? And I realized that I had no answers. I realized that it had been a long journey of just going without really understanding where I come from. Therefore, I did not really even know where I was going to.
Verenoy thought of someone who might be able to help her navigate this confusing moment, a person who had also gone through their own identity crisis.
I knew that the one person to help me through this was my grandfather, Reverend Fine Barang Samuel. So I decided to go back to my grandfather.
And how would you describe your grandfather? What was he? What was your grandfather like?
Oh, my grandfather was a very, I would say, a very passionate somebody. He was very loving, and he was very, very straightforward. He would call a spade a spade. He wasn't very good at sugarcoating things, as a pastor, surprisingly. And so he was a very loving person. He would reach out to people even when he had nothing. He always wanted to make a change wherever he went. And that's something that I grew up with. That's something that I'm very proud to have taken from him.
Many years earlier, her grandfather had been caught between two paths. Verenoy is Nso, an ethnic group found in Cameroon's northwest, whose origins can be traced back to the 14th century. Her grandfather had been in line to become a biki, a type of clan head or ruler who supervises various families and acts as a traditional guide.
It was impossible for him because he had felt like there was that conflict between tradition and Christianity. And he would usually say, "I cannot serve two masters at once," in his words. And to him, that meant that he would have to choose either being a reverend pastor or being a biki. And for him, his call was to be a reverend pastor. And because he was the only child also from that lineage of succession, no one else could take that position. Growing up with him also then alienated me from that culture, from that tradition.
And so Verenoy went home and sat down with her grandfather, full of questions about the Nso heritage and about the choices he had made years earlier.
And he told me that, you know, for me to be able to confront this challenge that I'm facing, this identity crisis, I need to understand my history. He walked me through a lot of things, how the traditional setup functions.
And as Verenoy's grandfather excavated the past and told her of their rich heritage as Nso people, he spoke too of some of his regrets.
He very much regrets that he had not been able to, you know, handle the traditional setup that was placed under his leadership.
But there was one regret her grandfather had that really stood out to her.
And when we spoke, he talked about Ngonso, how it was taken.
What was taken was a statue, a life-size figure of the Ngonso, the founder of the Nso dynasty and the guiding spirit of the Nso people. Under her leadership, the Nso had flourished, becoming one of the biggest ethnic groups in Cameroon. When she died, the statue was created and used for rituals, ceremonies and spiritual guidance.
When we started talking about the Ngonso, I saw someone also who feels disconnected from his own identity and his own culture.
And do we know how or why it was taken?
I would say that Ngonso was collected definitely in colonial context and under violent circumstances and under unequal power relations.
The exact details of how the Ngonso was taken aren't clear. But what we know was that it was taken in 1902 by a German colonial commander called Kurt Pavel, who subsequently donated her to Berlin's Ethnological Museum in 1903. And when Verneuil says it was taken under unequal power relations, she means the handover was unlikely to have been a friendly, peaceful one. Through her grandfather, Verneuil came to understand how critical a role the Ngonso had played within the community.
In the Ngonso land, we believe that when you have like a conflict, you can always, you know, connect to the ancestors. When the land is not at ease, you can connect to the ancestors and you make your plea to the ancestors. And so Ngonso was that object that connected the people now to the ancestors. So they would use that object. And also, Ngonso was used to invoke fertility of the soil. So they would use the object during the prelim season before planting. It was also a way of handing down history from the object you would tell the other generations who Ngonso was and to just help them understand better who they are. But then during that conversation, what touched me most is the fact that he had wished to see Ngonso before he passes on. He clearly mentioned to me that he wishes that Ngonso should come back so that he can see Ngonso at least before passing on. And to me, that was a push factor. That meant that I had to bring back Ngonso.
And so Verneuil made a promise right there to her grandfather to do everything she could to bring back the Ngonso. She had no idea how, but she was going to figure it out. Not only as a gift to her beloved grandfather, but also as a way to reconnect to her original heritage as Ngonso. So how do you go about trying to bring back a statue that has been gone for 120 years?
I started with research. I met people, I asked questions, and during this research period, I learned a lot.
She learned that Ngonso was currently in Berlin and getting ready to be displayed at a new museum called the Humboldt Forum. She also learned that hers was not the first mission to try bring back Ngonso. People have been trying for years without success. She says part of the difficulty was when people would write to the Germans, they would not know exactly who to address.
The Ngonso people didn't really know whom they were talking to. Would just find letters being sent to whom it may concern, to anyone of interest, to anyone in position to help. We cannot establish at this point in time who received those letters because they were not addressed to a specific person. Secondly, I also realized that these conversations were happening behind closed doors. And I thought to myself, restitution is part of a bigger conversation confronting the colonial past. How about we have these conversations as loud as these crimes were committed? Let's talk about them in public. People should be aware that these conversations are happening because this is about holding people accountable for their actions. So the strategy for me was to use social media. And I also did a lot of physical face-to-face campaigns in churches, in local community meetings.
I've been following the different battles for restitution across the continent. But what drew me to Verneuil's story was that unlike the other stories, which tended to be more high-level, hers was a much more grassroots DIY campaign, and that seemed to work in her favour.
People were keen to like know how this is going to play out. I think people got interested not because they believed that restitution was going to happen, but because they were seeing like a giant and, you know, the David Goliath kind of thing.
The Goliath in this case was the Prussian Cultural Heritage Foundation, a German federal body that oversees 19 museums and collections in and around Berlin. The Ngonso was to be displayed at one of the museums, the Humboldt Forum, labelled as Sculpture 315017. Verneuil was starting to find her feet and lean in to a newfound identity as an activist, writing, connecting and appealing to whoever she could. And momentum was slowly starting to build, helped along by a shifting global landscape. And by other powerful voices speaking out, like the Nigerian author Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie.
Based on information that we do have, we can deduce, for example, that the Ngonso, the beautiful sculpture of the founder and guiding spirit of the Nso people of Cameroon, a former German colony, could not possibly have been obtained under benign circumstances. Because why would you willingly give up your guiding spirit?
As the Bring Back Ngonso campaign began gaining increasing prominence online, Verneuil decided it was time to push things forward by taking her fight to Germany. Her target, the grand opening of the Humboldt Forum in September 2021.
I am a young person who is disconnected from her culture, from her identity.
There are photos and videos of Verneuil in action protesting outside the museum, flanked by dozens of other activists holding signs saying, "Bring back Ngonso." But perhaps the most significant moment of that trip was a quieter one, away from the press and crowds. It was when Verneuil was finally able to see the Ngonso.
Wow, that was the first time I saw Ngonso. It was the first time ever. It was a very difficult moment for me. It was emotional. I stepped aside and I cried. I was seeing our founder, our mother, locked up in some glass container, and for 120 years she's been, you know, yelling out she needs to be back home. We've been trying and we couldn't get her. I was feeling helpless. I was like, if there is anything else I would do it at that moment to get her out of there.
But while Verneuil was having an emotional but difficult reunion with Ngonso, her mother called with news. Her grandfather had passed away.
He passed on without seeing Ngonso. And that's something that hurt me to my bones. When I received the call from my mother, my heart sank into my stomach. I was like, not now. I was like, we are this close. Just hold on. I was like, It just got me really, really broken.
Her grief also did something else. It sharpened her resolve to keep fighting. Soon after she received the news, Verneuil found her way into a press conference to mark the opening of the museum. And when a Q&A session started, she seized the moment.
And so I raised my hand and in my mind, I was like, okay, are they going to call me? Okay, I mean...
Verneuil was hoping to be called on by Hermann Passinger, the president of the Prussian Cultural Heritage Foundation.
He pointed at me and then I asked him for a long time. Some people have been asking for the return of Ngonso. How much time is enough time for them to finally, you know, get a positive feedback? And then he gave me the usual excuse. I was warned already that he has the scripted responses. And he was going to say, it's important to, you know, look into provenance research and see how these objects were acquired. It's important to get into dialogue with the communities. So he just said the same things that I expected him to say.
But Verneuil did not give up. She managed to score another meeting. And this time she came fully prepared.
I handed over the official request again for the 100th time. And I played a clip of my grandfather telling me that he would like to see Ngonso before he dies.
If Ngonso comes back, it will be the pride of the Nso man and it will be the pride of Cameroon to see the Nso tradition be installed. Then Ngonso should come back so that some of us can see before we go to eternity from Germany.
And he watched the clip And then I told him, my grandfather died yesterday when I was protesting outside and you were reading your opening statement inside. And he was quite calm and he was just looking at me. And so I let us look at each other for some seconds. And then later on, I handed the letter to him and he told me your letter was in good hands. I had heard a lot about President Pat Singer from people, from the media, how he's just totally impossible to crack, I would say. But also, I think I saw the human being in him then. I didn't see the president of this powerful foundation. I saw a human being. I saw the human side of him. And to be honest with you, it changed a lot about my approach. I somehow believed him.
For now, that was all she could do. So Vernoy went back home to Cameroon. And then a few months later, the first domino fell. For years, the museum had insisted that the Ngonso was their legal property. But now they issued a statement acknowledging that it was taken under violent circumstances. And then, more news. Vernoy was told that a decision about the Ngonso was imminent. And so she flew back to Germany.
I was taken to the public library and then Pat Singer came downstairs from the board meeting they were having. And then he came to me and said the board has authorized him to give me two letters, two documents. And then he said they have authorized him to let me know that they will be returning Ngonso. It was just a powerful moment for me. I felt like I melted from inside, but then I needed to, you know, be standing upright from outside because I needed to pull through this conversation.
And how were you feeling in that moment, Vernoy?
I think what was racing through my mind was like, my grandfather, like, I want to hug him right now and tell him we finally made it. I want to call him first person to say that finally you can sing on song. And I was like, finally this is happening, not just for me, for Song people, for Cameroon and for all of Africa. I cried. Pat Singer, who was reading the letter to me, also cried while reading the letter to me. So it was just that moment that I realized that the return is something not just to victims of colonialism or survivors of colonialism, but also it's a tough discussion for the people we now call the perpetrators. And sometimes we can be very hard on them, also not understanding how they feel as the people who are only working to repair the damage caused by their forefathers. And always I tell people that from the beginning, I made up my mind that I'm going to see everyone. I'm going to approach people as human beings first, and then as the institutions they represent second. And I think that worked really well.
Vernoy started this journey in 2018. She's now 30 years old. The journey isn't over just yet. What comes next is the admin phase, state-to-state negotiations about timings, and then the physical return of the Ngonso. For Vernoy, the work of bringing back the Ngonso home has also brought her closer to her identity as Ngonso.
I think this success has placed me personally in a position where I would say that I feel very fulfilled. I'm very happy with myself. Just somehow I'm beginning to piece out a lot of things in my life from the success. But also most importantly is the fact that as a person, I can find closure in a lot of things. I'm able to even find closure with the fact that I lost my grandfather, with the passing of my grandfather. Because I felt before the restitution and when he died, I felt like I did not do something right. I felt like I could have done more. I was almost feeling like a failure, like a disappointment. The right word is a disappointment. I kept feeling like I was a disappointment. I did not fulfill the wishes of my grandfather. But when this restitution happened, I feel at peace with myself. I talk to my grandfather more often than I would before. I just talk and I know that he's hearing.
And it will be the pride of Cameroon.
And then, importantly for me, it has reminded me that there is a bigger battle ahead. It is not just Ngonso that was taken. It's also about Africa. It's about Africa's heritage. It's a motivation for me to know that I can also inspire other people to go out there and look for these objects. I feel satisfied. I feel really happy. But I'm also aware of what awaits me ahead.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Comb. Next week...
He was anonymous. You didn't know who was sending this, apart from a name like Shebeleza and a puppet on the video. You had no other way of identifying the person behind it, and that scared me.
This episode was produced by me, Kim Chakaneta, Mary Goodhart and Rob Wilson. Rob also did the sound design. Piers Lynch is our editor. A special thanks to Maryam Marif for her help with this episode.